You're listening to The Audit, presented by IT Audit Labs.
Hey, welcome back to The Audit, a podcast by IT Audit Labs. Today, joining us is Eric Brown from IT Audit Labs and Matthew Wold, friend of the podcast and cybersecurity extraordinaire. Hi, guys.
Hey, Mandy. This is where I want to mention some of Matt's other nicknames, but I said I wasn't going to, so I won't.
Well, today we're going to call him Travel Matt, because in preparation for the upcoming spring break season, we're going to talk about cyber safe travel. So joining us, Matt, why don't you kick us off with some best practices from an expert? And if could I even call you an ethical hacker who would know exactly what to look out for?
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure to be here. So, you know, I was doing a little research as we kind of came into spring break, and, you know, as COVID was, I don't want to use the term, you know, slowing down a little bit, but, you know, it seems like more and more people are going out traveling now. And I just thought it would be time to have some of those conversations about cyber safe travel, things to think about before you go traveling, you know, some steps and maybe some tips on what to do before, after, and during your travel. So I put this presentation together. You know, it turned out to be really relevant because when I originally put the presentation together, I wasn't planning on going on vacation, but now I am. And, you know, I'm following some of my own best practices as well. So,
did you get a phishing email that said that you had won a free trip? You clicked on it and now you're going?
Yeah, and I fully expect to get on that flight later today.
Well, good luck with that. And then maybe after that, you're going to meet a prince and inherit millions of dollars from a relative you never met.
That would be the end to my perfect day. So, you know, in the presentation, you know, I kind of go through some of these travel scams. And I think, you know, knowing what to look out for is probably a big key to staying safe. You know, we talked about fraudulent vacation sweepstakes that you could win. You know, that's definitely one of them. You know, if you're going to go on vacation, there's a lot of things like fake airline websites offering discounts, you know, fake rental homes, you know, stuff that sometimes is a little bit too good to be true. Those are always, you know, a red flag. Free vacation, travel promotion. If you just get a flight confirmation, especially if you're not planning on going on vacation, but you know, if you are and you're getting emails from someplace that doesn't look right, it probably isn't right. Something that I definitely want to dive into a little bit here is, you know, when we talk about like rental home fraud. So sometimes, you know, when you go to, you know, maybe book an Airbnb or, you know, something else, sometimes what happens is that listing isn't actually available. And so people have shown up, you know, expecting to get into these rental places, and either it's not even a rental place, or there's already somebody who's, you know, booked it for the exact same dates, and now you have a big problem on your hand. Sometimes these rental places don't even exist at all. And so they're just, you know, completely fraudulent bookings. And, you know, you show up for vacation and you have no place to stay. So I think it's really important to really know the site and the outfit that you're renting some of this stuff through. It's pretty important to use reputable sites.
Especially now that hackers are using Photoshop.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone the other day about some of the legitimate, and I put that in quotes, travel scams. But there was a Wall Street Journal investigation a couple of years ago into Orbitz, an online travel agency. And the claim was that they were showing higher price hotel rooms to Mac users compared with those who used a Windows PC to access their site. So I think they did an investigation, and Orbitz later admitted that it did have some sort of algorithm to target specific users based on what type of machine they were logging in from. And Mac users were being shown more premium rooms compared with Windows users who were always shown the cheapest price room for a room first. So apparently they've removed that feature, but interesting nonetheless that these sorts of games are played by the quote unquote legitimate companies.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad that you brought that up. I read something around that as well, not specifically Orbitz, but you know, just how when you go to some of these travel places online, that they'll either you know, read other cookies on your computer to see what other sites that you shop at, or you know, sites that you visit, you know, and if you're, you know, going to a lot of high-end websites, they just automatically assume that you'll pay more for a vacation, and same thing, they'll, you know, show you higher priced stuff. So I think that's really interesting. Definitely something to watch out for, you know. And how do you get around that? You know, you could either, you know, clear cookies out first, or, you know, if you have a web browser extension that, you know, changes, you know, that, that information, you know, that you could probably get around it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like, you know, a throwback to our dark web episode with Bill. You need Tails and a VPN to just book travel tickets, just like you're getting onto the dark web.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it shouldn't have to be that difficult.
No.
I guess that's where we're at. So, you know, I broke down a little bit of one of these travel scams, which, you know, I was doing a little bit of reading online, and you know, it's really interesting kind of, you know, how it unfolded, the attacker. And social media is definitely a useful tool for attackers, you know, no matter what it is, any sort of scam or attack like that. You know, the attacker is always looking for opportunities, and that goes for anything. But, you know, if they're specifically targeting travelers, or, you know, maybe it's just a, lack of a better word, crime of opportunity. You know, maybe a scammer comes across like a Facebook post or something that somebody says, you know, they're going out of town. They see that and they start targeting that person, you know, doing some open source intelligence to start gathering some background information, getting more information about maybe where they're going and when they're going to be gone. And then once they get all that information, you know, then they launch that attack, and, you know, either it's some sort of phishing scam, or, you know, some other sort of like smishing scam. But in the specific example that I saw, you know, is a person who, you know, just like what I was saying, is, you know, like a Facebook post where the attacker had, you know, seen that, that they were going out of town, and, you know, then did a whole bunch of research. And, you know, at the end of the day, what ended up happening is they sent emails to like their family saying, you know, that they were, you know, on vacation, and they couldn't use their phones and anything like that, and that they were in trouble, and that they needed them to wire money to an account, you know, not to contact them directly and stuff. And so, you know, they're pretty smart about these kinds of things, and, you know, how they use social engineering to try to manipulate, you know, people, you know, friends and family, and try to get them to send money. And, you know, so then these people came back home, and, you know, their family was like, oh, is everything okay? And of course they had no idea. And I mean, what a shame. It really starts with booking travel, right? That's kind of where the whole process starts, the whole, you know, being security minded, you know, when you go into travel, and booking travel is the first step. And, you know, I think it's important to book travel through a reputable company. You know, if you're booking travel, you know, through someplace that you never heard of, you're not really sure what you're going to get. But if you're going to go online and you book through like Travelocity or Expedia, you know, they're pretty reputable as far as online goes. But, you know, if there's other places too, if you want to book through like an actual, you know, like person, I think Carson Wagenlit is a travel place where you can go in and book through. If you're a Costco member, you can book travel through Costco. You know, so I think there's a lot of good companies that, you know, are a safe bet that you can book through. You know, when booking travel online, I think it's really important to have, you know, a safe online connection. Probably shouldn't be booking travel through, you know, your Starbucks Wi-Fi connection or over some random, you know, internet connection. You probably want to, you know, book it at home where it's safe. And then, you know, just monitoring all your travel accounts before your trip, you know, monitoring during and after your trip too, for any sort of suspicious activity. But, you know, just keeping an eye on it. So that way, you know, if you start getting weird emails, you know, that you can, you know, take some sort of action or dig into it a little bit.
Many credit card companies these days too, offer that fraud protection where you can spin up a virtual credit card number to use for a particular site, which is nice. And a lot of credit card companies too have no charge for international purchases. So if you're going internationally, you wouldn't pay a surcharge to the credit card company for using that card overseas. I know in the past there was not as many credit card companies doing that. So you had to try to find the right card when you're going to travel. But I think now most of them do, but it's always wise to check with your credit card company. And it also used to be that you'd have to notify them, I think, before you traveled. But now the algorithms are such that at least the ones I use don't require that pre-notification for travel. I don't know if either of you have experienced that.
Yeah, in the past, I've had to do that. But I think you're right with the way the algorithms work these days. You know, when I went to San Diego, or even when I was in Vegas, I didn't have to do any of that. So I think it's smart enough now that you don't need to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that was a really good call out too about, you know, the credit card companies and spinning up a virtual card, because, you know, that could definitely be, you know, a big saver for somebody, you know, if you're using that virtual card. And you know, if your credit card company doesn't offer that, there is other services like privacy.com that offer that ability. So that way, you know, you can spin up your own virtual credit card and use that as well. So yeah, I think that's definitely good to remember.
Yeah, that's a good tip about the privacy.com.
I know that, you know, for my, not every single credit card works for privacy.com. I knew somebody who was trying to use it, and the credit card that they had, they couldn't register it in privacy.com. So I guess that's kind of a bummer, something to think about. If it's not working for you, that maybe your credit card doesn't support that. You know, along with the idea of, you know, just being safe online, you know, and using reputable businesses, you know, protecting trip details is always a great idea too. You know, knowing what you should and shouldn't share online is definitely a huge plus. I'm in the boat where social media is not really my thing, but even if it was, I wouldn't post anything online about, you know, I'm going, you know, on vacation on such and such dates, or, you know, where I'm going to go or anything like that. I would just keep that to myself, but scammers tend to use that information to target you. You know, so I would say that, you know, if you have to share those trip details, you know, maybe it's something that you share over the phone with, you know, a trusted loved one, or, you know, like a trusted friend or something. If you are going to share that information online, maybe try not to use specifics.
I know people on their social media that have like a trip countdown and like even put in a map, and they are so communicative about their travels. I worry for them for this specific reason. Like, they're live posting during their trip, they're taking pictures of their hotel, their key card, their door, their room number. I mean, just really promoting every last bit of it.
It's like a Black Mirror episode.
Yeah, that is scary.
One of the things I've done recently when I've gone on some larger trips is to keep a paper copy of all of the things, just in case, you know, you're on a little bit longer of a plane ride, phone's not charged, get to a foreign country, and then you're trying to fill out the paperwork. Sometimes you've got to fill out paperwork to get into the country and go through customs, and they like to know the address that you're staying at, things like that. And if for whatever reason you can't get to it on your phone or computer, it's nice to just have that paper backup that, you know, you keep secure. But with just the details of where you're going to be and then some contact information on how to get in touch with, if you're staying at, you know, say a person's house or an Airbnb or something like that, how you would get in touch with them if for whatever reason, you know, you couldn't get into the property or what have you.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on, you know, when I was doing this research, there's a lot of organizations that were saying, you know, even having like photocopy backups of things like passports, driver's license, birth certificates, anything like that, just in case that documentation gets stolen, you know, while you're away. You know, what are your thoughts on having, you know, like a paper photocopy backup of that?
I had a situation. I was in Italy a couple of years ago, and there was a situation where the passport went through the washing machine, and it was a couple of days before we were coming back home. So I didn't have enough time to go to the embassy and deal with all that rigmarole. So I was like, well, let's just roll the dice and see what happens. And fortunately, it was intact enough to, you know, still have the picture and things like that. It was just like the, you know, it had gotten wet, so it was starting to come apart. And the customs agent was like, oh, this went through the wash. So he kind of made light of it. But I did have a copy. I took a picture of it and had a copy of it on my phone as well, but it didn't come to using that. The paper copies are probably a good idea if you have a safe place to keep them. I don't know that I'd bring my birth certificate, but I do know in some countries they will take your passport from you when you get to the hotel. So it might be nice to have that paper backup in case something happened there. What do you think, Mandy?
Trying to keep track of paper anything is so stressful to me. I'm so thankful for my phone and the app. I feel like it simplified travel so much that I'm not as good with the backup solution. So I'm taking some pointers from you guys on this call.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, I like the idea of having it backed up digitally, like on your phone. Yeah. You know, my worry there is like, what if you drop your phone in the ocean or, you know, something happens to it, and then all of a sudden, you know, now you have nothing.
I'm usually a super chill traveler where, like, I'll even roll up to the airport dangerously late and just confidence my way through stuff. But then the minute I get through the security line, I feel like I check for my ID and my phone like 7,000 times. So paper stuff, I just can't even think of it.
I was just going to say that some places use a mobile passport control now, and I'm talking international travel, so you don't necessarily have to fill out all of that paperwork. There is an app on the phone for it, and it makes it a little quicker to get through customs. And then, of course, if you do all of the things that you can do, like clear and some of those international travel programs where you pay a little bit of money, go through additional screening months ahead to get on an approved list, so to speak, and then you have facial recognition to get into the country rather than.
Cool.
Yeah. And I think the U.S. is starting to do that more as well, at least the last time I came through. It's been a little while, but they had facial recognition. They scan that picture on your passport and then some form of facial recognition when you're going through to talk to that agent.
I can't wait till we're in the place where it's just like a retina scan. Like you get to the ATM, retina scan, here's your money. You get to the airport, retina scan, get on the plane.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it sounds like a little, maybe a little work up front saves you a lot in the, of the back end if you go through that clear process and stuff.
Yeah, it is. You know, I think there's some people may not want to go through it because they take your fingerprints and go through the processing of that and then probably share those fingerprints with other organizations because I don't think it's a government organization that's doing it. It's some sort of private NGO that has a relationship with TSA and such. But, you know, for most of us, we've been fingerprinted in the system for a variety of work reasons, so it's not that big of a deal, but I can imagine some people might not want to go through it.
Yeah. Kind of like when you submit your DNA to like Ancestry.com and the fine print says that they could share that DNA information out with other organizations.
Right.
Yeah.
I think if only those of us in the security realm are the ones who are like, we're not doing this. We read fine print.
Yeah. I mean, to Eric's point, though, I mean, for anything that's work related that, you know, involves like CGIS and whatever, you've been fingerprinted already. So
a fingerprint doesn't scare me, but you don't need my DNA.
Yeah, that's fair. So, you know, I have some things that, you know, that I think maybe should be done before travel. And, you know, I think it's important that, you know, you think about any electronic equipment that you're going to take, you know, with you, because anything that you take, you're going to need to manage it. And, you know, if you take it, protect it, I think is kind of the key phrase there. But, you know, so just making sure that any electronics, you know, are kind of handled before you leave. So some important things, you know, to do are backing up any sort of files off of that device, you know, just making sure that if you like that phone, if you end up losing it, that all the data is backed up. So backing up files, updating any devices to the latest OS versions, and then not just the operating systems, but also applications. You know, so any applications that need to be updated, make sure you update those, confirming that your antivirus software is updated with the latest virus definitions, installing any sort of software that you're going to need. So, you know, definitely, you know, you want some VPN software so that way you can connect securely when you're out, you know, maybe even some device recovery software. So that way, you know, if you misplace your phone, you can locate it using strong passwords. I know we talk a lot about password safety and multi-factor authentication. So just enabling that stuff on accounts, you never know where you're going to be when you need to log into something. And, you know, having multi-factor authentication is always a great idea. You know, we kind of talked about international travel, and, you know, when you talk about installing software, a really great application is the U.S. Department of State Smart Traveler application. There's a lot of stuff that if you're going to do international travel, that application provides to people. And then just removing any sensitive data, you know, anything that you wouldn't want anybody else to see, probably should pull it out of your devices. Any unnecessary applications that you really don't need, those applications can be, you know, a gateway into that device if it were to get compromised. So, you know, maybe that application has some sort of flaw in it, you know, so just getting rid of anything that you're not going to use. And then, you know, just disabling like location tracking, you know, so that way, you know, like the old Foursquare when it used to just automatically like track your location and update, you know, send updates to Facebook and stuff like that, you know, checking you in places. So just disabling that kind of stuff, you know, disabling.
Even hearing that is triggering. That like should have been named like the stalker app.
Does that still exist? Do people still use that?
I don't even know if Foursquare is around anymore.
I don't think it's relevant, but that's a good thing.
Yeah. But, you know, Facebook, I think Facebook has that ability too, where, you know, it'll check you in places. Again, I'm not a social media user, so I'm not the best person to talk about Facebook, but.
You're not wrong. All social media platforms, I don't know if you can continue to share your location with friends, but you can absolutely check in places, and live stories seem to be such a growing trend right now that it'd be hard to avoid where you are when you're living your life out loud on social media.
Yeah, that's always just so scary. So, you know, I think turn it off in general, but, you know, especially if you're going to go traveling, that's my personal opinion. And then, you know, anything like personal hotspots, you know, if you don't need it to be on, turn it off. Same thing with like Bluetooth. I know that, you know, if you have Bluetooth headphones or something like that, and you want to use them, turn Bluetooth on for that. But then as soon as you're done, I think you should turn it back off.
And then keeping track of your luggage with like AirTags, for instance, is pretty cool, right? You could see if you put it in your checked luggage and even the luggage that you carry on in case it gets misplaced. It's kind of cool to be able to just open up the app and see exactly where that luggage is. I know I've enjoyed waiting at the luggage carousel and the luggage is still somewhere out on the tarmac. So, you know, it's not going to be getting to the carousel for a while. You got time to go to the bathroom or grab a cup of coffee or something like that. And then of course, if it does get lost or misplaced, it might be a little easier to find it.
I think that's a really interesting use of an AirTag. I didn't think about that, but now that you say that, yeah, I think that's, you know, if your luggage got misplaced, you know, you could, I suppose, use that to find out where it is too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
My parents recently took a trip. They had a cruise with multiple flights to get to their destination, and they watched as their plane took off and their luggage did not. Following this exact thing, so no one got there and was disappointed at the luggage carousel. Like, they knew it the minute they took off, like, well, junk.
Wasn't there a story recently, maybe like a couple weeks ago, where somebody had an AirTag in either a package or luggage or something, and it got misplaced, and they were able to find out that it was at some employee's home. Maybe it was a UPS package.
Oh.
And they were trying to get it back, and finally they just went on UPS on their Twitter feed, and they posted a picture of the AirTag location, and they said something like, UPS, I want my package back. And then UPS responded, like, I guess they had been trying to get the package back for a while, and this was like their last resort measure, and they posted it and they said they wanted it back. Finally UPS, I mean, it was only like a couple of hours, and they messaged the person and they were able to get the package from the UPS employee's house.
Wow. It's unfortunate you have to resort to public shaming to get your stuff back.
Yeah.
I know. Just talking about wireless too, and not to do too much product naming, but I know Firewalla is one. There's probably others, but Firewalla makes a small personal firewall device that you can essentially connect your hotspot to the Firewalla and then connect wirelessly your other devices to that Firewalla. So it acts as a firewall for your devices that are behind it, which is kind of cool if you're in an unknown place and, you know, you have a couple of devices that you want to connect to it. You could be assured that those are relatively secure behind that firewall device, and then you're just using that as a gateway out to the internet.
Talking about hotspots, that's something that you know, is going to come up here later, but, you know, I think it's really important to, you know, there's a cost associated with that, of course, but it's not as much as it used to be, you know. So I think it's really important that people, you know, don't connect to any sort of public Wi-Fi. And, you know, like, my kids have iPads and they, you know, they always want to connect and watch movies and game and all that stuff. And so, taking my own advice, I went out last week and I ended up getting a personal hotspot, you know, configuring that. I think that firewalla idea is really good too, because on a personal hotspot, there isn't any sort of firewall protection. You know, it's just that open connection out to the internet. So probably a smart idea to put something like that on there.
And you could do something similar with your cell phone provider, where you can get an international plan for data with your most major cell phone providers. It's like a pay per day or a pay per use. I think it's more expensive, but not necessarily unreasonable, just to add that in for a short duration of time. And then you can also, if you're going to be on a vacation, I know it works in most of Europe, you can get a hotspot at the airport in country that would give you 5 or 10 gigs of data, something like that, for a pretty reasonable cost. And with, depending on the company that you're using, they can ship you the device beforehand, or you can pick it up usually at the airport. And then when you're done, you just ship it back, you know, when you're done with your vacation. But I've done that in the past as well, and that's worked out pretty good.
Yeah. And, you know, when we talk about like the U.S. Department of State, you know, we talk a lot about travel advisory levels. You know, countries have, you know, like a level 1, 2, 3, or 4. And, you know, level 4 countries are, you know, they're like do not travel countries. But, you know, if you need to travel there, you could still do it. And I think that idea of having some other, you know, like service in another country is a really great idea. You know, personally, maybe I would take that a step further, where if I had to go to like a level 3 or a level 4 country, you know, maybe I get like a completely throwaway phone, you know, maybe even, you know, a separate SIM card, and take that with me. You know, I've heard that when you go into some countries that you're required to turn over all of your electronics, and that sometimes they'll just openly connect them, you know, and download the data. You know, they have you unlock them so that way they can access the data. And I think that's really interesting and scary at the same time, you know, that if you want to enter the country that you have to turn over everything and unlock it. It's just...
That's a bit much. Yeah.
Feels impressive.
Yeah. Especially, yeah. I'm like the guy who's going with at least 2 phones and probably 3 laptops. If I have to whittle it down to 2, I will. But yeah, that's ridiculous.
I was going to say, you're always rolling with multiple pieces of technology.
Too many. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think, you know, if you're just traveling within the U.S. or maybe you're just going to like a level 1 country, you know, getting, you know, some sort of like other data plan, I think it's a great idea. But I mean, has anybody ever gone to like a non-level 1 country? Like a level,
to level
2 or 3?
I've been to a level 2 and probably a level 3, but never a level 4.
I feel pretty uncultured because I don't even know where you get this level scale. So moving on.
Well, you can, if you go to the U.S. Department of State website, they have a part of their website where you can select the country that you're going to go to, and it'll tell you what the travel advisory level is.
I also want to be like, hey, like this YouTube if you're on the same page as Mandy. So thank you for teaching us.
Well, you know, like, the level 4s are like North Korea, Iran, stuff like that.
Yeah. But, you know, I haven't done really any international travel outside of North America. So that, you know, just Canada for me. But, you know, as I was going through the different travel advisory levels and stuff, I was reading a lot more of the in-depth information that the Department of State posts there. And there's some really interesting information because they talk a lot about, you know, things that us as Americans wouldn't think would be a big deal. It's like a serious crime over in other countries, you know, and you can, you know, obviously go to jail in that country for doing some of that stuff. And I was just reading through it and I thought, wow, you know, this is anybody who's going to travel internationally should read through this, because a lot of this stuff is just a no-go over there. You know, you get yourself into a lot of trouble.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even things as far as like having a dating app on your phone is frowned against, or, you know, having pictures that we may not think are a big deal over there. You know, it's a crime. Like it's just, you can't do it.
Yeah.
So,
well, and Mandy, you've probably been to a level four country before. Like, for example, Mexico has states in it that are considered level four. Some of it, which is level four, is do not travel. Like, for example, Sinaloa, due to crime and kidnapping, is a do not travel. But then you may have other states in Mexico that are a level three, which is reconsider travel, or a level two, exercise increased caution. And for example, a reconsider travel, which would be a level three, like the state of Baja California, which is in Mexico, it's due to crime and kidnapping that they're saying, you know, just use extreme caution when going there.
Well, I have been to Mexico, so you got me. And next time I'll use the U.S. Department of State Smart Traveler site.
Awesome.
Nice. You know, we talk about, you know, making sure that all of your stuff is backed up. Yeah, I think it's important just, you know, backing it up to, you know, some sort of cloud storage. You know, if you have, you know, an Apple device, you can upload that to the Apple cloud. Same thing with Google. If you don't have either of those, or you have a lot of data, you could back up something to like Backblaze. And if you don't have cloud storage, you know, just backing it up to either like a flash drive or some sort of external hard drive, maybe leaving it at home in a safe.
What do you think about those hotel safes? Have you ever tried to access one?
I've used one a long time ago when I was naive and thought that I was the only person in the world that had the code, but not anymore. You know, after reading that, you know, anybody in the hotel staff, you know, can get access to the backup code, which makes sense, right? Because if somebody puts something in there and forgets the code, they're going to have to get it out of there. So not secure at all. Probably more secure if, you know, it's a non-hotel person that breaks into your room, then I suppose, you know, it's just up to them trying to guess your four-digit code. But, you know, one of the things that kind of came up in some of this research was, you know, if you do have to leave like a phone or something inside of a safe, you know, they suggested taking out the SIM card if that's possible, or removing the battery if you can do both of those things, and then, you know, just throw them in your pocket, because, you know, phone batteries are usually pretty small, and that SIM card is, you know, just that tiny little wafer, you know, that at least then if somebody, you know, a hotel person came and got in there, there wouldn't be any way to power on that phone. And even if they did, that SIM card would be gone as well. So I think that's pretty good advice, right? I mean, there's not much more you can do unless you're going to hide it someplace in the room, which I suppose you could do.
There's that Darknet Diaries episode where I think they were poker players, and like online poker players, and the one person had put things in his laptop in his room, and he had, I think, other stuff in his safe. I listened to it a while ago, so I'm not fully recalling, but he did have an unauthorized access entry into his room, and someone had fiddled with his computer and I think got into his safe, but it might have been nation state level stuff, but that's not an excuse for it.
Yeah. And I think they make, well, there is a slide in the slide deck that shows it, but there is a device that you can buy to put into a safe like that. And basically you can put a like a padlock or something on it, so that way even if somebody did know the code, you know, and they tried to get into it, you could still lock it. And you know, you could probably just throw that in a carry-on and bring it with you, or you know, just throw it in a bag. So
yeah,
you know, there's some ways around that to keep it safe. But while you're out and you know, traveling, maybe you're stopping by a coffee shop, maybe you need to jump online real quick. Something that, you know, probably everybody's heard of these days is VPN software. I think this is still a really great solution, you know, just to have on your phone in case you need it. These days, VPN software is fairly inexpensive. If you're using a VPN software that's free, more than likely you're the product. That VPN company is probably collecting your information and then selling it to third-party organizations. So I would steer clear of anything that's free. But you know, there's a lot of good solutions out there. There's Mozilla's VPN service. That's a little bit newer. I've never used that one. But there's ExpressVPN, NordVPN, and ProtonVPN. I've used those ones. They're pretty good. I'm not sure, Eric, what's your choice of VPN software these days?
No, I like all of these. I like what Proton is doing, and I think all of these ones that you've mentioned here don't log either, which is important. I think it was Proton that recently went through a third-party audit that proved that they don't have logging capabilities, or if they do have logging capabilities, they're not turned on. Another one is private internet access. I've used that in the past. That one seems pretty good. I look for ones that have a global distribution of servers, and preferably ones in countries that I'm traveling to.
But, yeah,
like you said, there's a lot out there.
Yeah, that's a good point too, because you know, you probably need to know, you know, or make sure that you're going to have access in that country, because I know that. Like NordVPN doesn't have some of the servers and stuff that ExpressVPN has, and vice versa too. So yeah, I think that's a good call out, making sure that it's going to work wherever you're going. You know, we talked a little bit about removing sensitive data. You know, I think maybe sometimes people, you know, just initially think of maybe like photos that would be sensitive. And, you know, I'd say that there's probably more sensitive data than just photos. You know, if you have documents, maybe they're like financial documents, or I guess anything that you wouldn't necessarily want someone to download, you know, keeping those off of your phone. There are some, I don't know if Eric or Mandy, if you've ever used one of these, but there are some like third-party applications that will do like almost like a locker, like an encryption locker on the device, where you can store data and then you need to have, you know, like a 6-digit passcode or, you know, a fingerprint or something to get into it and then access those documents. Have you ever used software like that before?
I've heard about that type of software when it came to some applications on jailbroken iPhones back in the day. I know a buddy of mine had an app that you could play sounds of a different location, so you could be on the phone and then you could play the sound of like a train station behind you, so it sounded like you were in the train station when you were talking on the phone, which was kind of funny. And then there was some sort of like hidden applications where it looks like it's a calculator and you put in the right code and it gets to a private address book or something like that. I haven't seen anything recently, but I imagine those things still exist.
Yeah, I have an application called OneSafe, and it's specifically designed for putting documents inside of it and, you know, keeping it encrypted. So I use that a lot to store any sort of, you know, documentation that I don't want just sitting on the phone in case it ever got, you know, lost or stolen, or you know, God forbid somebody was to hack it and download that data. So, you know, I was just kind of thinking that, you know, if you were going to keep your travel documents, maybe maybe try to keep them in an application like that, just in case, you know, the phone was compromised some way that they couldn't, you know, get a hold of, like, you know, like a scanned passport document or something.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure.
Yeah, any sort of like text messages, I suppose, you know, if you've had a conversation that, you know, you wouldn't want anybody to read or you wouldn't want it leaked out there, maybe deleting those messages, any contacts, you know, if you don't want to be necessarily associated with somebody, if it ever got out, you know, maybe get rid of those, change the contact information, maybe. And then any apps. So, you know, when we were talking about going to other countries and, you know, where dating apps, you know, aren't seen very positive, you know, maybe getting rid of those, you know, before you leave. And then I think, you know, there's some really good tips about, you know, how to stay safe while you're traveling. And I almost feel like, you know, you could probably do a whole podcast on, you know, physical, personal safety while you're traveling. That's probably a ton of stuff you could talk about there. But, you know, for this, we'll just focus on things, you know, digital to keep safe. You know, but auto connecting is a big thing that you should turn off. And I think we talked a little bit about that. You know, those things like NFC and Wi-Fi, you know, the ability to airdrop, or I think Android has nearby share, turning that kind of stuff off. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, Wi-Fi auto connecting. And, you know, when you think about things like the Wi-Fi pineapple and, you know, attacker tools like that, you know, you definitely don't want, especially when you're on vacation, you don't want your phone auto connecting to something like a pineapple. And then, you know, you don't realize that it's connected there. And, you know, now you're just handing over information to an attacker.
Yeah, that's good too. Yep.
Yeah. I am bringing my pineapple with on vacation.
Are you really?
Yeah. I figure, well, Manny, I got.
Oh, what's that?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, Manny, don't you usually bring your Phonagachi?
That's what I was just going to ask Matt, if he has a Phonagachi that he's going to bring.
My Phonagachi is already attached to my backpack. Yep.
Nice.
That will be coming with as well. I figure, you know, I got a lot of time by the pool where I'm just hanging out. I might as well, you know, fire up the pineapple and see what happens.
Well, if you haven't checked it out yet, episode 11, you could pull a Jaden with that Phonagachi.
Yeah.
Oh, and take it on the airplane. Yeah, if it's already attached to your backpack, that'll be an interesting one on the airplane.
Yeah, I'm just going to let it run. I got my, like, 30,000 milliamp battery. I figure that'll be enough to get me from A to B and still have battery left over.
Yeah.
You know, and avoiding public computing, public charging, public Wi-Fi. We talked about that one. But, you know, I think one of the things that I mentioned in this presentation that I think a lot of people don't think about or don't even know about is public charging, right? And, you know, the really interesting thing is that if you plug your cell phone into one of those like hotel lamps, you know, where that has the USB port, it seems really convenient, right? You don't need to plug anything into the wall if you just have the cable, you know. But, you know, people can put electronics into that stuff and, you know, all of a sudden you plug into charge and it starts downloading data and, you know, maybe it sends it someplace via Wi-Fi or, you know, maybe
that sounds like a Black Mirror episode.
And yeah. Speaking of that, what do you guys think about when you're doing these trips using VRBO or Airbnb, that there isn't some sort of nanny cam weirdness going on while you're staying there? Do you check for that? What do you look for to make sure you're not being spied on?
I feel more vulnerable to being spied on at like gym changing rooms or tanning salons or public restrooms. So I guess I really haven't put a lot of thought into like a guest room at a hotel. I personally haven't stayed at an Airbnb where the owner was still there or it was someone else's home.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so my wife went to Florida last year, and her and her friends rented an Airbnb. And that's one of the first things I told her is, you know, look for anything suspicious, because they do that, right? They, you know, you can hide one of those little pinhole cameras somewhere. I mean, they sell so much stuff that has, you know, pinhole cameras. You know, they have like the USB, you know, like the wall charger that has a camera in it. I mean, everything can hide a camera these days. But I think also, don't they sell a device that you can use? It has like a red, like an infrared light or something on it, and you can shine it around the room, and the camera lens will reflect, and you can spot it when you look through the device.
Interesting.
Is there anything you do, Mr. Brown?
No, I guess the only thing I do in hotels when I'm in other countries is just be cognizant of the peephole in the door and put something over it if it doesn't have a built-in cover to it. I had a buddy of mine who was traveling to India years ago, and he heard a noise in the hallway outside of his room. Long story short, it turned out somebody was out there using one of those door scopes. It's kind of like a way to reverse look through a peephole on his room. And ever since then, I was like, well, it's probably just better, because usually the way hotel rooms are set up, like, you know, you can look in that peephole and see the whole room. But just putting something over that peephole just adds a little bit of security. And I usually put the blinds down too, if they have those blinds that, you know, one's like a sheer blind and then one's a blackout. I'll just put the sheer one down during the day.
Isn't it crazy? This could probably be its own podcast, but there's so much reality television and so much content available online. People are still spying on people in hotel rooms and Airbnbs. It's so perplexing to me because there's so much available that people want you to see. Why are we seeking out other opportunities?
It could be just the danger factor of it. I don't know.
The taboo-ness of being a voyeur.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's voyeur, the After Dark that's episode,
Mandy.
The word
Mandy. I was looking for. Well stated.
Yeah.
I'm sure that if you Google Airbnb, like spy camera, I'm sure you probably just find a ton of articles where people have found, you know, some sort of spy device in Airbnbs.
And that'll be your next episode of The Audit.
Sometimes hotels may have like the lending chargers or, you know, cables and stuff. So if you forget your stuff, you can just go down to the front desk and, you know, borrow something, you know, and it may even be something as innocuous as like a USB cable, but, you know, they sell USB cables that have all of that hardware built right into the cable. So, I mean, you can't even trust a cable these days.
That's a good point, too, to pack extra cables and chargers to be able to get on a variety of power types.
Yeah, I think if it's not yours, if you didn't bring it or you didn't buy it at, you know, an electronics store or something, don't even connect to it.
Yeah.
And then they have, you know, you've probably seen this, too. It's like the OMG cables, and they have one that's, or like the USB killer USB stick, and the cable now that can kill USB, you know, so you plug it in and all of a sudden, you know, it just destroys whatever device you plugged in, you know, just to be malicious.
Oh, sends an electric current to it.
Right. Yep. So yeah, so much stuff out there that you have to avoid, you know. And I think, you know, just kind of on this last topic here of guarding devices, we talked a lot about, you know, locking up devices when you leave them behind and removing the SIM cards and stuff. But I think it's important too, just to power down devices when they're not in use. I read even where they were saying that if you're going to go through like security, if you're in another country and you're going through checkpoints or any sort of, you know, security location, that you should power those devices off, so that way you know, it's much more difficult to try to power them on and copy data from them, or, you know, to get into those devices.
Sure.
So maybe, you know, maybe just some extra food for thought there. Does anybody connect their phones to rental cars when you're on vacation?
I believe I have before through Bluetooth.
When you were done, did you go through and like unpair it?
Wipe it out?
Yeah.
I'd like to say I have 100% of the time, but I can't say that because I'm not sure. I don't share my contacts or anything through Bluetooth like you can in some cars, but that is a good reminder to do that.
That is an interesting feature in a rental car, and it's surprising they wouldn't disable it because it's really easy to make the mistake to allow it to download your contacts.
Yeah. Well, even your destinations too, right? Like, you know, when sometimes you can get a loaner car if your car's being worked on for an extended period of time, or, you know, a rental car as well. And you know, you go in and you look and you can see the history of where the people before you that have had the car have traveled to, which is interesting. Especially if you're doing like a Turo. I don't know if you guys have ever done that, where you know, you're using somebody else's car and paying them for it. It's kind of like Airbnb for cars.
Yeah,
I've never done that, but I heard about it.
Yeah, I haven't either. So maybe now we talk about returning home.
Sounds great.
Okay. So I think, you know, following, you know, good cyber hygiene, you know, while you're out is a really great idea. You know, when you come home, there's, you know, a bunch of things that you need to do as well. And I think a lot of this is, you know, kind of goes back to what you do before you leave, but maybe just more of like a cleanup stance, you know, or cleanup idea, you know, when you get back, you know. So, you know, it's important to, again, update antivirus software, you know, run any sort of scans just to make sure that, you know, if you connected to that Wi-Fi, you know, or if you left that device alone in a hotel room for a while, you know, that, you know, you run that AV scan, make sure that the machine is clean. You know, I don't know, Eric, when you go on vacation, when you come back, do you ever just wipe the machine? Do you have a machine that's specifically designed, you know, just for travel, and then that's all it's used for? Or how do you do that? Like, what kind of steps do you take?
I have not done that, but maybe my profile might be a little different because I use a cloud-hosted PC when I'm away, so that kind of maybe mitigates the need for that, because I'll just connect to that cloud device and do my work there and keep anything off of my local machine.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but that's an interesting idea. Do you use just something like a Paperspace instance or something along those lines?
I've used Paperspace and do use Paperspace. I've got just a regular computer there, but also like a cracking computer there. And then for work, I've got a Windows 11 machine up in Microsoft's cloud, so they call it a cloud PC, which works pretty well. But then for other customers where they provide computing equipment for me to use while I'm working with them, I'll typically either take that with me if it aligns with their policy, or if I don't plan on doing any work with them, I'll leave that computer behind.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a really good point, you know, and I think if you're just an everyday user, if you have the means to do some sort of cloud computer while you're gone, that's probably the best thing to do. I think that's a great idea. Then you can either just spin it down at the end of your vacation, or you know, you could just reset it if it has that ability to do some sort of, you know, like point in time reset.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when I go to level 4 countries, I bring a burner phone and I keep all my electronic devices at home.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, that's a good plan. Maybe have a burner laptop too.
It would be awesome to be that cool.
Yeah. I know when I took my last trip, I just set up my laptop and then I just took an image of it and then went on vacation, did my thing. And then when I came home, I just reloaded the image and just try to mitigate any sort of issues that way, just in case something had happened.
That's really smart and good precautions.
Yeah.
Do you VPN back into your home lab at all?
And I do.
From that? Yeah.
Yep. I've done that too. You know, it's really nice because then, you know, all of my network traffic is going through, you know, that secured connection. I have access to, you know, all of my, you know, Proxmox VMs and, you know, I can use one of those machines. I have home automation too. So, you know, I can control some of that stuff as well. So, yeah.
Nice.
So I think, you know, once you return home, you know, another big thing is shredding boarding passes. You know, I guess I shouldn't be shocked, but, you know, there's barcodes on all of that stuff. And, you know, while I've never scanned one, I guess there's a wealth of information in that barcode. And so you wouldn't necessarily maybe want somebody getting a hold of that and getting, you know, your personally identifiable information from that boarding pass or those luggage tags or boarding passes for that matter. So just getting rid of those if you can. And then I think once you return home, it's a great opportunity to then share any sort of social media stuff, you know, letting people know how your vacation was, where you went, sharing any photos, you know, talking about all the fun you had. And then, you know, just keeping an eye on, you know, those devices. If you weren't able to reset, you know, a phone or a tablet or something, just making sure that, you know, if weird things start happening, you know, windows opening and closing on their own, or the battery draining super fast, you know, that might be an indicator that the device is compromised. Keeping an eye on any sort of, you know, financial accounts that you use. So if you did use a credit card or even a debit card while you're out, you know, just, I guess I would say monitor that a lot more closely, you know, just to make sure that everything looks normal. And then just keeping an eye on your email too, just so that way if you get any sort of like hotel bills or any receipts or, you know, like invoice stuff from when you were on vacation, you know, saying that there's still an outstanding balance, you know, that you contact anybody before just paying it. Cause you know, that could definitely be a scam still.
And there's, you know, examples of, I guess you could call them legitimate scams in the country as well. And I'll give an example of that. When I went to Iceland, renting a car, if you're going to go anywhere other than Reykjavik, is pretty necessary to do to get around the country. And rental cars are really expensive in Iceland for whatever reason, 2 to 3 times what they would be in the US. But you can find some deals where they're cheaper and they're off airport. But these companies are unscrupulous in how they either charge for insurance or they scam you on damage that's on the car when you return the car. So if you do go to a country like this, Costa Rica is another one where they can get a little funny with the car rentals. And if it's another one of those things where if you go off airport and rent at a cheaper place, you just want to make sure you take really good pictures. If it's rained out and the car is wet, ask for a towel, wipe it off, and take really detailed pictures of the car, the paint from all sides, hood, back, top, because they will try to say, oh, well, there's a scratch on the car. But another thing you could do is, you know, again, use that virtual credit card. And then if they try any of that post-return fee gouging, you can just cancel that virtual card. But it's something to be cautious of, and it doesn't happen in all countries, but read the reviews beforehand before you travel. A lot of people will talk about it, complain about it, share their experiences, and it's probably better just to rent from a reputable place and pay a little bit more than go through the rigmarole when you're returning the car and in a hurry to get back to the airport. They're very well versed at these scams, and they know that you're under time pressure, especially if it's an off-site rental facility. And you know, they're it's well-practiced social engineering.
Yeah. Do you ever take a picture of like the odometer, like the dash, the yep. dash stuff as well? Okay.
The dash, the even if I'm renting something locally, like from a Home Depot, using their vehicle to, you know, it's like $20 or $30 for 90 minutes. You know, yep. if you just need to haul some stuff around, I take a picture of exactly where the gas is, the odometer. I take pictures of the outside of it. You know, it only takes, you know, a minute to do all of those pictures. And that way you've got proof, you know, when you return it that nothing happened.
Yeah, that's a good tip. So we've talked a lot about things to do once you returned home. And I think that ties in really well with a lot of the things that you should do before you go traveling and while you're traveling. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things is just, you know, maybe doing a little bit of research with your vacation, you know, before you leave. You know, we talked a lot about, you know, doing some research on who to book travel through, like when you're going to stay someplace, you know, making sure that, you know, your stay is, you know, a legitimate stay, that if you're doing Airbnb, that it's, you know, a legitimate place. You know, if you're going to use a car rental company, to do some research there as well. So I think that's one of the big things, doing a little work ahead of time to make sure that everything is legitimate, and then doing work to, you know, just make sure that all of your devices are, you know, backed up. You're ready to travel with them. You know, where you're going and what you can and cannot do, maybe what you can and cannot bring with you. And then just, you know, while you're on vacation, just being cognizant of, you know, what devices you're leaving behind, and maybe who has access to those, and, you know, what you're sharing online. So just being really, you know, careful there as well. And then, you know, once you get home, just making sure that, you know, you have all of your electronics with you. So, you know, make sure you have that before you leave, make sure that you have it when you get back, you know, just kind of doing a little cleanup work after that. And then, you know, you can have the fun part of sharing all that information on social media if you know, that's your thing.
Thanks, Matt. We've talked about a lot today and really appreciate your time. Before we wrap up, what's your favorite place to travel to?
You know, I've been to San Diego so many times. It really is one of my favorite places. The weather just always seems to be so nice. So currently that's my go-to destination.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. Lots of fun stuff to do in San Diego. Good breweries there too. How about you, Mandy?
I always like to say my favorite place is probably one I've never been, but like we've been talking about, with travel restrictions, I've definitely have a new fondness for being able to just jump on a flight and go to Vegas, whether it be for DEF CON or for the weekend. And so that is a place I often frequent.
Oh, very cool.
How about you?
I would say my current favorite place is, I really did like Iceland, I have to say. really cool country, lots to see and do, a lot of outdoor activities, great food, and fun people, really just a great trip overall.
I've always had it on my bucket list to check out peak northern light season in Iceland. Was that something you got to see?
It wasn't. I was there a little bit before. They were really active. I guess they're active all the time. But before they were really active, I didn't quite make that season. And it was cloudy a lot of the time that I was there. But overall, a really great trip.
That'll be an excuse to get to go out again. That's the more I sit with it. My favorite travel destination has to be Colorado. Lives there for a little while, and so it's really nice to get to go back out.
Colorado's a great place. And I'm going to amend mine, Mandy, just to say anywhere where there's a direct flight is a place that I'd like to go. I do not like airport transfers.
I agree. I used to travel in a previous role, and I was home a week, gone a week, and so I loathe airports.
Well, we had a lot of fun today, and Mandy, too, thank you for your time as well. Always fun to chat. Again, Matt, thanks again. I'm sure we'll have you on again soon. But, that was Travel Safe with Matt Wold and the folks at IT Audit Labs. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.
Hi. Okay. Matt Wold, would you mind if we put the presentation on our website so people could view it? It's okay to say no.
Sure. It doesn't bother me.
That would be the only other thing I could use. So I won't rebrand it or change it at all, but Casey's been working on the platform to tie together episodes and related content or things we recommend. So this would be really complimentary.
Sure. I can email it over
really
to you.
Good prezo.
Thanks.
Great.
Did you guys have fun with it?
I enjoyed this topic, and that's why I was like, "Ooh, I'll come to this one. It's Mr. Wold."
Right. And now Matt gets to travel for real, so that's cool.
Yep. Yeah, you know, I called my, I usually call my mom on the weekends, well, my mom and dad, and, you know, we were talking about traveling and stuff, and they were good enough to join the library one. It was the only one that they'd been to, and so my mom was kind of grilling me on if I was taking some of my own advice, so.
How sweet. When you sent me the library link, my parents were going on a cruise in a couple of days, so I sent it to them too, and I was like, watch this. It's for old people at Ramsey County Library. Like, you guys are in that group.
Yep. That's awesome. I think it's just a topic that, you know, we don't think of very much. And so, you know, I had a lot of fun doing the research on it. And I feel like there's probably so much more that could have gone into it. I hope people can get something out of it.
Definitely.
You weren't wrong about Googling Airbnbs with hidden cameras. Like, there was a lot of juicy content there, but by the time I got it pulled up, we had transitioned and I didn't want to belittle the point, but that's an entertaining thing to do if y'all are ever bored.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Like people's horror stories?
Yep, there's stories, and then there's also, you can tell annually around like the May, June timeframe, different entities are articulating how to look for cameras or how to be cautious of it. One of the stories I was reading, actually, they took the Airbnb owner to court because of the cameras that were placed strategically throughout the property that they felt compromised there.
Nasty.
Yeah.
Guys got to get better cameras. That's what happens when you buy the cheap shit.
Yeah, but
I don't go to tanning salons often, but I bring them up because that was one of my first jobs. I worked in one, and a competitor to our franchise got busted in a huge sting about the same thing. Because, you know, at tanning salons, if you ever go to like get ready for a Mexico trip or something, a lot of people, you know, pre-be in the sun because they want to, you know, get that tan. Yeah, pregame. But they're pretty much like, some of them don't even have drywall, you know, they don't have ceilings. And so this guy was literally, there's just holes with cameras in them. watching people prepare to get in the tanning bed and watching people while in the tanning bed. And that really boosted our business when all his salons got shut down. Well, Wold, protect yourself from weirdos.
Yep. That's the name of the game.
Have a safe flight.
Thank you. I will.
Bye, cool. Guys.
See ya. Have a good weekend.
You too.
Later.